makes a person not be Torah is when he rejects fundamental principles of the Torah. But the Torah itself does not use the word apikoros. The word apikoros just means Epicurean was a Greek. Epicurus was a Greek philosopher. That's all. It's a later word.
How could the rabbis then have the authority, then, as late as the Ibn Ezra, to decide what's an apikoros and what's not? Because with Pilel and Shammai, fine, we had a Sanhedrin then. So the Sanhedrin could decide. But without a Sanhedrin, how could the rabbis that late in history go about deciding what's an apikoros?
Well, it is a good question, but once again, just as there is a halachic process in matters of halacha, so too in matters of what is considered to be acceptable faith, there are young to go look at every generation, have to look and look at the sources. They don't just make it up. They look at Chazal, they look at the sources in the Torah, and they determine what is the appropriate view for us. So, but again, this is a controversial that I don't know a lot about today. There are those who say, in matters of halacha, there is no such thing as and by that they mean, as long as what you say has a makor in Rishonim, Achronim, Chazal, then the fact that most Jews, most Gedolim say it's not a right belief, only means that you're in error. Your belief is erroneous, but an erroneous belief is not an apikoros belief. In other words, their svara is, if the Ibn Ezra can say it, then why can't I say it? I'm just following the Ibn Ezra. Right, so that's a big machlokes. Is there such a thing as a psak halacha in making something up apikoros? Rabbi Yashiv said there was. Rabbi Yashiv said there was. Others say that's not shayach. It's not shayach to say that the Ibn Ezra who said something was not an apikoros, but if I say the same thing, I am an apikoros, when all I'm saying is what the Ibn Ezra said, so how could I be an apikoros if he wasn't an apikoros? And to say, well, when he said it, there wasn't the psak, and when I say it, there's already a psak. Some people have, they say that's not a logical distinction. But be it as it may, I just want to point out, if you don't learn like the Ibn Ezra, let's say you want to learn like the Rambam, the mainstream Rambam, that chas v'sholom, we are maimon, v'yamuna shlema, that not a single syllable was added to the Torah after Moshe Rabbeinu's death, with the possible exception, which the Gemara itself says is a possibility, the last eight verses about Moshe's death, there is one opinion that says Yeshua wrote that. So if that's so, how do you understand the pasuk? These are the kings of Edom who ruled before there was a king of Israel. Who is the king of Israel that you're referring to if it's not taking you down to Sheol HaMelech? So the answer is, most Mefarshim say, that the Melech is none other than Moshe Rabbeinu himself. That in a sense, we consider the first king of Israel not to be Sheol HaMelech, although Sheol was the first one that had the title of Melech. We consider Moshe Rabbeinu to be a Melech. And in fact, in Moshe Rabbeinu's Zeis HaBracha, his farewell address, so this is all another machlokes. We have a pasuk that we actually sing at Chasnas. Vayihi Bishurin Melech, Bisaseif Roshei Am, Yachad Shiftei Yisrael. You know that's Vayihi Bishurin. So what does it mean? Yeshurun is a name for the Jewish people when they're upright. In Yeshurun, there is a melech when all the people are together. When all the people are together, the melech can truly rule. So some Mefarshim learn the melech is Moshe Rabbeinu. Others say the melech is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're praising Hashem when there's Ashkenaz. So that's another machlokes. But at least there is one interpretation that Moshe was the melech in that pasuk. And many Mefarshim say in this pasuk as well, Moshe is the melech. In other words, but be it as it may, so whether the melech in Vayishlach is Shaul, based on the Ibn Ezra's very risky suggestion, or whether it is Moshe Rabbeinu, what is the pasuk saying? Esav was zeicha to kings, malachim, for generations before the Jewish people had malachim. Meaning Esav was assuming that a king for a moment is a symbol of power and influence. What it's saying is, Esav had power and influence many generations before the Jewish people had power and influence. Now, why is that important to know? So listen to what Chazal said. Because of the eight times Yaakov called Esav my master, and Yaakov was mevatel himself to Esav, and Yaakov subjugated himself to Esav, there were eight generations where Esav had ascendancy in the world with kings before. sometimes Imam Bracho says that if a Russia is very successful in this, it is good not to antagonize it. I don't know if you remember the Imam Bracho's text. Sometimes just lie low. Don't make a big deal. Don't try to fight him. Don't try to argue with him. That's sometimes. Other times we try to say that you have to fight vicious in every way possible and don't acknowledge any superiority on the part of the Russian. Now, similarly, the Gemara says like this. We know Amalek is the grandson of Esau. You know this. Esau's oldest son was named Eliphaz, and Eliphaz cohabited with a maidservant, Timnah, a maidservant, and from that union came a man. Amalek was a person. Came this man, Amalek, and Amalek is, of course, the ancestor of this nation that represents the epitome of Amalek. Let me digress for a moment. There is an amazing vort from Chaim Shmuel Levitz that gives a person great, great pause. As Chaim Shmuel Levitz points out, you know, Amalek is like the worst nation that ever lived, right? To eradicate Amalek, totally, totally evil, irredeemable, etc. The Gemara says that Timnah, Amalek's mother, actually wanted to marry into the Jewish family. She wanted to marry Yaakov Avinu's children. And she was rejected as not being worthy. So because she was rejected, and she so much wanted to connect to Avram's mishpacha, if she couldn't get into the good part of the family, she went to Esav. But her kavana was to be mizdavek to Zara Avram. And out of that came Amalek. Chaim Shmuel Levitz says, Amalek comes from rejection. When you take a person who wants to serve Hashem, who wants to learn Torah, who wants to go to Yeshiva, and you tell them they're not good enough, they're not worthy, the dafka from that is how you get Amalek. Right? Chaim applied this on Isaac, Chaim is Rashiva Mir. And, you know, Mir was only a fraction. Mir was not 7,000 people in his day. Maybe it was 500 people at the site. But still, there were issues about accepting people, telling people to leave, and sometimes, you know, a guy doesn't go to Seder. Do you kick him out? Do you tell him to go somewhere else? And Reb Chaim had it when it was extremely reluctant to ever ask somebody to leave Yeshiva. Because this is his lesson. He said, you kick somebody out, you might be creating a Amalek. You don't kick people out until they become a very negative influence on others. Remember, that's a separate judgment. When they're influencing others, then you have to take care of that. But the stam is like kick a guy out, even if he's wasting his time. He says, but Derek Clow, better here than the street. You know, you're wasting time, right? You're in Yeshiva, there's davening, whatever it is. There's something there. That's the kayak of Amalek. But why am I bringing this up? I'm bringing this up here for the following reason. The Gemara in Baba Basra says that Amalek will only be defeated by the children of Rachel and not the children of Leah. The children of Leah will never be able to defeat Amalek. And we see this throughout Jewish history. The first war against Amalek in the desert, when Amalek attacked us, was waged by Yehoshua ben Nun. That's Yehoshua ben Nun's entree. That's his first appearance in the Torah, when Moshe makes him the general to fight Amalek. In those days, he wasn't Yehoshua, right? His old name was Hoshea, and that's that. He was the one. Now, what tribe is Yehoshua from? Ephraim, who is Ephraim's father, Yosef, who is Yosef's mother, Rachel, right? So the first war against Amalek was led by Zerah Yosef. The first king of Israel, Nadab Moshe, who was given the commandment to wage war against Amalek, was Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech is from the tribe of Binyamin. That's also the children of Rachel, not the children of Leah. And because Shaul did not kill Agag, who was the king of Amalek, so Agag impregnated somebody, and that person became the ancestor of Amalek, and David HaMelech was not able to finish the job. Why didn't David finish the job? Again, spiritually, David, who is from Yehuda, from Leah, is not able to do it. The story of Purim, Mordechai and Esther, who are from the tribe of Binyamin, Zerah Shaul, the descendant from Shaul, were able to defeat Haman, who is from the Moloch. We talked the other day about Mashiach ben Yosef, that before there's Mashiach ben David, there will be a Mashiach ben Yosef. And Mashiach ben Yosef's job is to destroy a Moloch to pave the way for Mashiach ben David. So you see a pattern that Amalek can be defeated only by the children of Rachel and not the children of Leah. Now sometimes the children of Rachel are from Yosef and sometimes they're from Binyamin, but they are always from Zerah Rachel. Now why is that? Why is that so? So there are different reasons that are given. But one reason is given the following, that when Yaakov brought all of his children to Esau, all of them bowed down in submission, except the Medra says Yosef did not bow down because Yosef stood up to protect his mother in the case Esau would try anything wrong. So the only two Shvatim who were not Mishtachaveh to Esau were Yosef, and Binyamin wasn't born yet. Binyamin is not born until afterwards. So every tribe that bowed down to Esau will be subordinate to Amalek, will not be able to destroy Amalek. It is only those Shvatim that were not Mishtachaveh Esau that will have that koach. Right? So you see that Chazal considered this obsequiousness, this bittul, this submission to Esau, to have been a dangerous thing. That is why Esau had Molucha 8 generations before Am Yisrael. That is why, I mean, what would have been Chas V'Shalom if even Yosef would have bowed down, and let's say Binyamin would have been born and bowed down? Then it seems to be that we would have had no koach at all to go against the Moloch. You have to understand, everything the Amos do has long-range significance for the history of the Jewish people. This is called Masa Avos Siman Levanim. Whatever they do, that creates, you know, even if it's a small gesture, that creates the foundation of everything that's going to happen to us, right? So bowing down, what's the big deal of bowing down? But that bowing down, it's like when you're when you build something, when you build a bridge, let's say you're trying to span water. So even if you're off by a quarter of an inch or a tenth of an inch, by the time you get to the middle of the river, you know, the two halves are going to be really far apart. So little deviations at the beginning of a process turn into big, big flaws and big, big problems. And this was the idea of the Mishkach of Eliezer and the like. Okay. Now, we then come on that the night before Yaakov meets with Esau, right? The night before Yaakov meets with Esau. So the pasuk says, "Vayivaser Yaakov levado." Yaakov is all by himself, and he has a wrestling match with someone that is described as a mysterious man. That's what it says. So first of all, the question is, why is Yaakov by himself? So the Chumash tells me Yaakov had already taken his family across the river Yabok. Final river separating him from Eretz Israel. He already brought them there. But he went back. He went back after everybody already crossed. What did he go back for? Lauren Kulin gives us the very enigmatic comment, oh, he had forgotten some small jars, and he went back to get those jars. Why did he do that? So Rashi quotes Lauren Kulin, Sadiqin, Chaviven Lahan Mamona Yosef Yehufa. A tzaddik loves his money or property even more than he loves his body. He's willing to almost endanger himself, to go back in the middle of the night to a dark, deserted place. Of course, he didn't know he was going to encounter this guy. Because, you know, he left his pen behind, he left his paper clips behind, he left some little things. He can't leave that there. Wow, that almost sounds like, you know, the anti-Semitic slur that, you know, Jews are cheap, you know, they got to go back for all of their things. What's good? And a tzaddik? A tzaddik loves his money more than his good. What shy of such a thing? A tzaddik is koresh from Gashmis. A tzaddik is not osek in Nizanyan. So the Maral says really very, very pashut, and that is the idea is the following. a righteous person, and certainly Yaakov, you know, every tzaddik with his madrega, understands that everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him is supposed to be used for Avodas Hashem. If Hashem gave the tzaddik 5 paper clips instead of 4 paper clips, he knows that there's a reason that he has to use the 5. So for the tzaddik, there is no such... So on one hand, whatever Hashem gives him, he's happy with. If Hashem just gave him a piece of bread, then that's all I need, and I'm very happy. But if Hashem gave him a lot of bread, it has to be that there's a tachlis. And the Mefarshim point out that when Yaakov and Esav describe their wealth, they use different lashonos. Yaakov says, yesh li kol. I have everything. Esav says, yesh li rov. I have an abundance. Now there are two ways of learning it. There are actually two different ways of learning it. One way of learning it is that Yaakov says, I have everything I need. I'm sameach v'chelko. I rejoice in my lot. I don't need any more. Esav can say, well, I have a lot, but it's not everything I want. I would like one of the... Esav is basically saying, I have a lot, but I want more. But some of the Mefarshim give an opposite choice. Mam Shabbos. They say, Yaakov says, I have everything I need to serve Hashem. Esav says, I have more than I need. It's Sadiq to never say, I have more than I need. Maybe, of course, I have more than I need for my own personal type, but that's fine. But to say, a Russia could say, it's superfluous. Because anyway, what I do, I use my money for frivolity. All right, so after a while, how many millions of dollars do I need on gambling? So I can say, I have a lot more than I need. Although the truth is, typically they don't say that either, but there you go. But Esav could say, I have more than I need. Sadiq cannot say, I have more than I need. Because if I have it, I need it. Now, why do I need it? That's a whole cheshbon. I need it for tzedaka, I need it to support my family, I need it to do mitzvahs. That could be a million reasons. We certainly don't mean I need it for my own personal taiva. But memela, for Yaakov Avinu, even if you're missing a small, insignificant thing, you want to find it. Because b'hashgacha, when you live a life where every single thing has a purpose, and the tayelas, then even the paper clip, you know, there has to be a reason Hashem gave it to me. So I'm going to look for it. That's what it means that tzaddikim have a love of their mama, because they know that whatever Hashem gave them has a purpose, has a tachlis. There is no waste. There is nothing superfluous in life. Because Hashem gave it. Now, again, maybe it's for tzedakah, but the tzedakah that go to waste, well, that can't be. That is why, of course, the Torah itself has an initially the Torah, right? You're familiar with this? Baal Tashchis. Now, in the context, the Torah is talking about you're not allowed to destroy a fruit-bearing tree. And that, in fact, is an Isur D'oraisa, to destroy a tree that bears fruit. I remember in Rabbi Yashiv's house, in the part of the building, he walked into the lobby, and there was like a tree growing, and a hole in the roof where the tree went through. So you could have, it looks like a fancy hotel lobby. They had, the building was not a fancy building, so it's incongruous that you have this like one tree growing with a hole in the roof. But the answer is that when they built the building, I don't know how many years ago, 80 years ago, it's not a new building, when they built the building, there was a fruit tree there. People said, you're not allowed to cut down the fruit trees, you have to build a building around the fruit tree. It's a major thing. So that's a fruit tree. But Chazal say, Moran Baruch HaKama, that lo tashchis, not to destroy. Baal is just Mishnayic Hebrew for lo, but Baal Yerah. That Chazal say that this is not only for fruit-bearing trees, but one does not destroy anything for no reason. One does not throw away food, one does not rip up clothing, etc. All of these things, right? So Judaism is pro-conservationist of resources. We say that if Hashem gave it to you, there's a reason. It's significant. That's why a person has to take care of things in that way. In fact, there's an interesting quote from Ravelio Lapian. Ravelio Lapian says, this is a total regression, but it's a very, very beautiful quote. You know, there's a statement that says that the reason why the basic was destroyed is because they didn't make Birchas HaTorah. Torah. They didn't say blessings on the Torah. So the question is very obvious. The reason why the first place of Mikdash was destroyed is because of Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shemitah Shabbat, the worst Averis in the world. Why do you come on through? They didn't say Birchas HaTorah. I mean, that's an Avera, but that's not as chomor as Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shemitah Shabbat. So Rabbi Lapian used to explain it based on a teaching of Chazal. If you remember the book of Malachim, David HaMelech, towards the end of his life, was shivering. He was very cold. And they covered him with blankets, and he was still shivering. He was cold. So the Gemara says, why was he not able to be warmed up? Because it said, anyone that treats clothing with disrespect is not going to be warmed from the clothing. And when David was being chased by Shaul, at some point, when Shaul was sleeping, or two different stories, one Shaul is in a cave relieving himself, the other is he's sleeping, David cut away a piece of garment to show Shaul that I could have killed you and I didn't. So Chazal say he was mavaza beged. He treated clothing with shame. So if you treat clothing with shame, it doesn't give you warmth, even though it's different clothing. In other words, the only thing that protects you is when you treat something with cover. If you don't treat it with respect, it doesn't protect you. That's what you see by clothing. And that ties into Baal Tashchis. The physical property that Hashem gave us to serve Him has a purpose and has a tachlis, and you treat it with respect. But my digression is, Rebellion applies this to Birchas HaTorah, and that is this is idea. If clothing is not going to protect you unless you show kavod to it, Kal v'chomer, the Torah, is not going to protect you from sin unless you're machshiv the Torah and you treat it with respect. So, here's this big finish, beautiful pshat. When the Gemara says that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because they didn't make Birchas HaTorah, he doesn't mean that that was the sin that caused the Chorban. The sin that caused the Chorban is Vadai, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shemitah Shabbat. But the question is, since they were learning Torah, why didn't the Torah they learned protect them from sin? It's like saying that, you know, you learn in yeshiva, morning seder, and then you have an hour and a half for lunch, so you go to town and you rape, murder, and rob a bank. And then you make it in time for the afternoon seder. That's not possible. How can a person learn in shtag and be connected to Torah Hashem, and then you do avodah zarah, gilui arayos, shemitah shabbat, you know, bein hazman, bein hazor? The answer is, they didn't make Birchas HaTorah. That refers to their attitude. They looked at the Torah as a subject. They didn't appreciate it as a gift. They may like it. If you're just like, right, see his demon, just like if you're not machshiv the garments don't protect you. If you're not machshiv the Torah doesn't protect you. And yes, you can learn 4 hours of morning seder and then rape, pillage, and Rabbi Ben said. Okay? So the shtickle of Birchas HaTorah, that's an important muster anyway, to be machshiv the Torah, to look at it as a gift, to appreciate it. That's what a bracha is. That's thank you, Hashem, for giving us this gift. But the thing I'm bringing in, but that point is not Nogeyar Parsha. It's Nogeyar Parsha is this Yisai, that even in the Olam HaGashmi, everything was given to you for a purpose, and therefore you have to treat it with respect. And that is why Yaakov Avinu goes back by himself to pick up the Pachim Kitanim, because for a tzaddik, Esav can say, I have more than I need. A tzaddik can never have more than he needs, because if he has more than he needs, he wouldn't have it. He understands that everything has a tachlis, everything has a purpose.